The date is August 1st, 1990, and we're watching Young Guns 2. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
Hello and welcome to I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the nostalgia to see if they still hold up. My name is Sean Wells, and with me, as always, is the Arkansas Dave Rudabaugh to my Henry French Brown, or Henry Brown Jim French. Let me try that
Henry
again.
Jim French Toast.
With me, as always, is the Doc Scurlock to my William H. Bonney.
Hello, everybody. It's Colin Stewart. This one's going to be wild.
Maybe the William H. Bonney. You wanted to say Yoo-hoo, I'll make you famous. I'm sorry. I should have thrown you Emilio. Yeah. So this week, we are looking back at August 1990, when the movies and theaters were Problem Child, Presumed Innocent, subject of episode 73, Ghost, subject of episode 69, Die Hard 2, Die Harder, and of course, our movie for today, Young Guns 2, which earned $44.1 million on a $20 million budget. So,
damn.
Respectful, but...
No sequel? You can't get a sequel by doubling your money?
not a blockbuster. I mean, yeah.
I guess. All right. Well, there will be spoilers ahead, so if you don't want this movie spoiled for you, like, gunshot to the back.
Well, in the belly.
In the
belly. Belly's the slow dying one.
The gut shot. The gut shot, that'll kill you.
Yeah, every time.
Just like a spoiler.
Yeah.
So if you don't want this movie spoiled for you, then hit pause, go watch it, and then come back and hear what we have to say.
So I found two taglines for the poster of this movie. First one, Colin, I mean, I know I never share anything with you ahead of time, but go ahead, tell me what the first one is.
I'll make you famous?
You're right. In fact, you missed Yoo-hoo.
Oh, Yoo-hoo.
I'll make you famous. Right. But yes, tagline number one, Yoo-hoo, I'll make you famous. So there it is, right there on the poster.
Is the second one a teaser from, or is it, there's only the one?
No, there is a second one, yeah.
Oh, is the second one, I said it at the end of our last episode, but is it all the, they're all the same, only the name, it's all the same, only the names will change?
No Bon Jovi lyric, no, unfortunately, number two.
No Blaze of Glory, he's going down in a blaze of glory.
No Wanted Dead or Alive, none of that. No, it was The West Just Got Wilder. Yeah. Yeah, you had so many other better choices that they could have used that they didn't. They just missed out on it all. Yeah.
Missed connections.
Yeah. Other than Yoo-hoo, I'll make you famous, which, like, was that even a tagline? Or, like, was that even a thing in the first one? He never said that in the first, did he?
He says, I'll make you famous.
Does he in the first?
For sure.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, I just couldn't remember. Well, here we go. Let's find out more about this movie from Colin with a 60-second synopsis.
This is going to be a lot longer than 60 seconds unless I just really rattle it off.
I'll just, score it with some Bon Jovi. It'll be all good.
All right. In 1950, attorney Charles Phelan is contacted by elderly brushy Bill Roberts, who seeks a pardon he was promised 70 years earlier by the governor of the New Mexico Territory. Dismissing Bill's claim that he is really William H. Bonney, a.k.a. Billy the Kid, widely believed to have been killed in 1881, Phelan asks if Bill has any proof, and boy does he! Bill's story begins in 1879 as the famed outlaw has formed a new gang with Arkansas Dave Rudabaugh and Pat Garrett. In the wake of the Lincoln County War, New Mexico Governor Lew Wallace has issued warrants for the arrest of everyone involved. Billy's former compatriot Doc Scurlock, now a schoolteacher in New York, is captured and imprisoned alongside fellow regulator Jose Chavez y Chavez and their old enemies. Now the most wanted man in New Mexico, Billy meets with Governor Wallace, who agrees to pardon him if he testifies against the Dolan Murphy faction. Instead, Billy discovers he's been tricked into being arrested with no chance of testifying. He escapes, returning with Dave and Garrett and posing as a lynch mob to free Doc and Chavez, who reluctantly join them on the Mexican Blackbird Trail to Mexico. Desperate for reinforcements, the gang accepts farmer Henry William French and teenage Yankee Tom O'Foliard, while Garrett decides to stay behind to open a boarding house. Billy demands $500 debt from a former ally and John Chisholm, leaving two of his cattlemen dead. Furious, Chisholm joins Wallace and they offer Garrett the job of Lincoln County Sheriff and $1,000 to hunt Bonnie down. The gang is followed closely by Garrett's posse and Tom is shot dead by Garrett, leading Billy to admit that the Mexican Blackbird was only a ruse to keep the gang together because Billy loves his pals.
Family!
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Diesel. This is like 1990s Fast and Furious.
1890.
I don't got family. I got pals. When Garrett and his men find them, Doc is killed, sacrificing himself for the group. Chavez is wounded, and Billy is captured and brought back to Lincoln, where he is sentenced to death, but once more escapes with the help of an old friend. Billy finds his gang, but Dave has fled from Mexico, and a dying Chavez leaves to meet his fate alone. That night, an unarmed Billy is confronted by Garrett and asked to be allowed to run to Mexico while Garrett tells the authorities that he killed him. Certain that Billy would not be able to resist coming back to the United States, Garrett refuses and prepares to shoot Billy in the back. In the morning, a burial is held for Billy, but Garrett's horse is taken by an unseen figure. And the mystery lives on.
Yeah. Right on. Oh, yeah, so Young Guns 2, I mean, I made the mistake when we watched Young Guns 1 back on episode 75 that I followed it up with this one, and I realized now when I got confused in that first recording, and it is Young Guns is the reason why I try never to do that with any of our other recordings, is to watch a follow-up. I saw where I may have made the mistakes when I was remembering the first one. But this one, going back to my history with Young Guns, I mean, I loved the songs. I loved the music that came out of this movie. I mean, I guess it was one movie, but it kind of inspired, or one song, but it inspired an album. And I remember I always kind of liked this one more. This was the one that I kind of remember a bit more from when I used to watch it when I was younger. Mm-hmm. And I think it's more because we've given Billy a catchphrase that he uses several times in this movie with the "I'll make you famous." So, Colin, what about you? What is your history with our Western month here with Young Guns 2, our young cowboys?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big fan of Young Guns. I loved the first one. I definitely remember in liking the second one more when I was younger, although I think I've changed my mind on that, but I still like it a lot. Maybe the first time I saw a naked woman in a movie, so that was probably memorable. You know, I mean, the first time I watched this movie, I was definitely in elementary school, so probably didn't know what was happening, but I was ooh, there's a bum.
A bum. Yeah. Very tastefully done nude.
Yeah, for me, I think the biggest thing I remember about this movie is I was, obsessed with Christian Slater around this time.
Okay, yeah. Cuffs and Pump Up the Volume. And
yeah, and I always remember, liking this movie for him. Similar, I think I mentioned this, I liked Robin Hood similarly because he was in it a lot.
Yeah.
And similarly, he is a very small, fairly insignificant part of this movie.
That's the running joke, is that he's so unimportant that nobody remembers his name.
Yeah. So
come on, you've heard of me.
This was a cool watch for me, though, because I hadn't watched in a long time, and it's one where I know how every now and then it's you watch a movie from your childhood for the first time with adult eyes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Where you're can actually there are just so many.
This is the one for me, too.
There are just so many aspects of the overall story that I had never clued in on until this watch. So it was interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, okay, here we go. Let's jump into Young Guns 2, directed by Jeff Murphy, produced by Paul Schiff and Irby Smith. Irby is a fascinating name to me. It's I-R-B-Y. It's like Kirby without the K. Irby Smith. Smith, that's quite the handle. And written by John Fusco, who was the writer on the first one. And he also has movies like Hidalgo and Spirit, you know, horse movies under his belt. So he likes cowboy movies. He's also got a couple other ones like Marco Polo, I think, was his fault.
I blame you for that.
So we open this movie on a desert with wind blowing, and then some Spanish guitar starts up and we see a guy riding a horse. And then we get the old psych out, because when this old man sits down and, you know, parks his ass on a desert bluff, a car or a big truck races by, and we find out that he's actually in modern times, but, you know, we are expecting it to be like the 1800s. You know, ooh, I'm impressed with the makeup of the old man. I think Emilio Estevez, it looks not too bad. It's a little mask-like. Like, it's not as flexible as some of the old man makeup you see in movies, but Emilio Estevez pulls off this bushy bill in the opening of this movie.
Yeah, I was thrown off. I didn't really remember this part of this movie with the... how it starts off with in modern times.
Well, and this is the part I wanted in the first movie, was the old man telling the story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I was also, like, confused, and I was trying to do the math, and then I learned that, like, Brushy Bill is based on, like, a real guy. Like, that was a real guy.
There was an actual guy that claimed it.
And he died in, like, I want to say, like, 1950-something.
53, I think it was. Yeah.
And then I was like, okay, like 1870 to 19, that's like, you're like 80. And then I was like blown away, because I was like, wow, somebody in the 1950s was born, could have been born in the 1800s. That's crazy.
Yeah, like in the 50s, when, or the 30s, the 40s, the 50s, when they were making all these movies about the Old West, that's like us making movies about World War II. Actually, these days, it's like us making movies about Vietnam. Like, that's how it was for these people back in 1940. It's like, oh, no, that was just yesterday.
Yeah. Because I was doing the math, but then I was like, I guess in, like, 1950, they would have had semi-trucks. I don't know. Yeah. It almost, the cars and stuff almost made it seem too modern. Yeah. I didn't have time to, like, go and fact check, you know, like, the model of the vehicle to see if it lined up with, like, 1950 or whatever, But I kind of remember, as I started, like, clue in, I think when I was younger, I thought that was, like you always do. But you think that, like, that's, like, happening while you're alive. Like, so for me, it would have been, like, this was the 90s. Okay, and so then I was, like, having, like, a weird, like, cognitive dissonance where I was, like, but it's 1990, he's 18. So I was, like, you can't be, like,
180 years old. Or whatever. Wow. He's immortal too.
But all that aside, I do agree that I thought the makeup was good. I read a few reviews that were fairly critical of it, but I thought it was good.
Well, yeah, there's not as much movement as you would like for it, but the performance as well, though, is part of what pulls it off, is that he's got the old man thing down. Like, it's like when Chris Evans does old Captain America in the last Avengers movie, you know, it's same sort of, you know, Biden, Chris Evans.
Yeah.
And it's also fascinating because looking at this movie now, with, you know, old man eyes and knowing a lot of these actors better now, seeing the lawyer come up, and it's Bradley Whitford. Yeah, I can never remember if it's Whitfield or Whitford. It's him coming up, and he is so young, and you're staring at me right now. You're like, who the fuck is Bradley Whitford? You know, Jake's dad on Brooklyn Nine-Nine, Mr. Peralta. That's who this lawyer is.
Okay.
Well, he was on, like, the West Wing and stuff like that. But, yeah, like, he's almost unrecognizable in this movie. So if you knew who I was talking about, instead of having that stunned expression on your face. Yeah, but a lot of these guys as well, where it's just like, you know, it's a legendary cast. It's a long way of saying, hey, let's talk about this cast list. Let's run down this cast list.
All right, we got Emilio Estevez as William H. Bonney, a.k.a. Billy the Kid, a.k.a. Brushy Bill Roberts.
Yeah.
Kiefer Sutherland as Josiah Gordon, Doc Scurlock. Lou Diamond Phillips as Jose Chavez y Chavez.
I remember, I mean, Lou Diamond Phillips was our reason for having this as our 75th episode, the first one, right? Because it was our diamond episode.
All right.
I remember thinking how clever that was.
Christian Slater is Arkansas Dave Rudabaugh.
See, and that's one of the things that threw me off when we watched the first one, is I was like, where's Christian Slater and why is Charlie Sheen here? Yeah, it's because I know this movie better.
William Peterson is Pat Garrett.
Oh, yeah. Mr. CSI.
Alan Ruck as Henry William French.
I love how he is kind of like Cameron Frye of the Old West. He's this put-upon guy.
James Coburn is John Chisholm. I don't know who Artie Fall is. D.A. Reinerson.
Was he one of the other old guys that was sitting around the table with John Chisholm? I don't know. Yeah.
Balthazar Getty is Tom O'Folliard.
That's a name I know. Balthazar Getty. I have heard that name, but I have no idea who he is, really. Like, and even saying Tom O'Folliard, it's like, I can't remember. Like, he's too young in this, maybe, if he's famous now. Like,
yeah, I thought that, like, every time I saw him, I thought it was like Edward Furlong or like, even like, there are times where I thought it was Corey Feldman.
Could have even been like Casey Affleck, you know, at that age. Yeah.
Jenny Wright is Jane Greathouse. Jack Kehoe is Ashman Upson. Robert Nepper is Deputy Carlyle.
Yeah, I remember him from Prison Break. He's Teabag.
Tom Kurlander is Deputy Sheriff J.W. Bell. Viggo Mortensen is John W. Poe.
That's the big surprise one where I'm just like, shit. I don't know why, but like for some reason, I never thought Viggo Mortensen was like an actor before Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, you know, like it's like he did not exist before Aragorn to me.
Yeah, it's kind of like what's his face from Stranger Things, David Harbour. It's like, you know, did David Harbour exist before Stranger Things? Maybe, but yeah. So Viggo Mortensen, when I saw him show up, I was like, what the fuck? That's crazy.
Yeah, Tracy Walter is Beaver Smith. Bradley Whitford is Charles Phelan, as you said.
Yeah,
Scott Wilson is Governor Lew Wallace. Leon Rippey is Deputy Sheriff Bob Olinger.
Scott Wilson, going back to him. I mean, if you're a Walking Dead watcher, you'll know him.
And then we got John Bon Jovi appears in a non-speaking role as a bandit who attempts escaping during the prison scene.
Yeah. And I wish I had known that before I watched the movie, because I would have kept a sharper eye out for him. Yeah, so there we go. I mean, like, all-star cast, but, I mean, we knew that going in. It was an all-star cast in the first one, so why wouldn't the second one be, too? It's kind of funny how many of those guys have, like, gone on to, like, TV.
Yeah. Like, yeah, they should almost make a Young Guns reunion TV show.
You know, like, yeah, like, Christian Slater has Mr. Robot, Kiefer Sutherland had 24, Emilio Estevez had Game Changers for one season, I mean... And of course, Mr. CSI, William Peterson.
Yeah, they also went to TV like at a time. Well, I guess not really Christian Slater, but like, I wonder what Kiefer Sutherland's thought process, because it's like, well, maybe he never really became like a big movie star though, did he?
Well, he had a good number of hits because he was in things like Flatliners and,
right.
And of course Lost Boys, and
it just seems like weird that. Because he was kind of 24 was kind of in the time where it still seemed kind of like taboo to do like the flip flop from movies to TV.
It was a very big deal at that time, and then he kind of started a trend because that's when you had Kevin Bacon come and do The Following, and then you had a couple others like that where it was these big stars that were leading a network series, and it's like okay, and then streaming took off and everybody has a fucking TV series now.
Yeah, TV is cool now.
Yeah. It's super cool. Yeah, that's right. It's time for old guns. Old guns.
Drops. Gets taken out.
So after the old guy tells his story about, I like how that's his evidence is, I'll tell you some stories.
Scars. Oh, yeah. I got a lot of scars. There's like a Joker joke in there somewhere, but
yeah. How did you get those scars? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So we cut back to see like horses riding through a canyon, and they're bad guys that are looking for Billy the Kid, and well, they find him apparently sleeping, but turns out nope, it's an ambush. This scene is also one of those that I even remember the should we give him a proper burial, like from the commercials that were on TV at the time where they're kicking dust over him. Yeah, should we give him a proper burial? And they kick dust over him. It's still a great moment. They definitely decide to ramp up the comedy in this one, I would say.
But I think story-wise, it makes sense because this is Young Guns 1, I think still plays more as like an ensemble movie. Like Doc has a much bigger role. They have like Charlie, who has like a much bigger role, and it's like Billy, it's kind of like how Billy comes to the forefront. Like by the end he's like the clear guy, like at the front, whereas this movie starts off with his where he's like the guy. And so I think that's kind of why it's more comedic, because
he's movie already is more, full of himself.
Yeah, it's more based around him and cocky. his attitude, where I feel like in the original one, there's more people who kind of, like, I don't know, even that out a little bit. Because I would say he hasn't changed that. Like, Billy hasn't changed that much from the first one. It's just that now he's more of it.
He is definitely more, yeah. Like, they made sure that Billy had a one-liner for just about everything. Mm-hmm. That's for sure. And a couple of them are based on real encounters, but yeah, this one really takes the legend of Billy the Kid to be a lot looser of a story. Yeah.
And then I think too, like when you add in Christian Slater and like Dave, that also like just creates more comedy, because he's essentially like, he wants what Billy has.
Yeah. Well, my first thought when we do meet Dave is, it's like, okay, well, Christian Slater can at least do a Western accent better than he can do a British accent. I don't think he even bothered trying in Robin Hood.
No, but nobody did.
Yeah. Well, no. Kevin Costner tried, at least for a hot minute, in some scenes. But yeah, at least this one is like, okay, no, that's not just Christian Slater. I can see a bit of a cowboy on that one.
Yeah,
I buy him more.
But he still also like ventures into that like Jack Nicholson light at times.
Yeah. Yeah, he's the margarine of Jack Nicholson. Just watched we just did Austin Powers, so that's the margarine of evil. The Diet Coke of evil. And so we end up cutting to see Doc Holliday Doc Scurlock. Not Doc Holliday, yeah. Doc Scurlock is a teacher. And, you know, he's living his life in snowy New York City when he gets arrested. Now, how far did they make him walk? That's what I'm wondering. When they get to this town, at what point did they say, we're going to drag you behind a horse? Because I don't think they walked them all the way from New York
from
City,
New York to
right?
New Mexico. I don't think so. I guess when I watched the movie, I just assumed that, you know, he was somewhere like nearby.
Yeah.
But when I was looking it up, I was like, oh, he was in New York.
Yeah, he's not in Montana. He's not, he's not straight up from New Mexico. He's way the fuck out there. So are they like, well, his punishment is 10 miles. So when we're 10 miles away from the town, we'll chain him up and make him walk. Mm-hmm. Or just from the train station, maybe. But yeah, so that's where he ends up getting reunited with Chavez, with his long flowing locks. Jealous of Chavez's hair.
Yeah, me too. I'm about to throw in the towel on hair here pretty quick.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I've got a pretty good mane going on these days. Problem is I went in for a cut the other day and wanted it cleaned up underneath, and it's like they took too much, so it's like all the really good shape disappeared. But anyway. At least I'm 45 and still have hair problems right. that aren't
Count your blessings.
It. Yeah. Anyway, we find out that Billy the Kid kind of has this town that hides him out, so he and all his guys head back home. And this is where Billy is getting patched up because he got shot in the leg. And we meet the boy. What was the boy's name again?
Tom.
Tom, yeah.
It's really hard to take Emilio Estevez serious when he comes in like all... Like, you want this? You want to be an outlaw? With this bullet hole in his leg. And you're like... At the end of the day... I don't... Like, Emilio Estevez, like, runs this, like, fine line of, like... being super cool, but also like, I can't take you serious.
Yeah.
It's very like, strange.
I don't understand why Emilio Estevez has always been put in tough guy roles. Like back to Breakfast like Mighty Club.
Yes, the wrestler.
Like even in Breakfast Club, he was the jock. But Mighty Ducks, he's this failed NHL hockey player. And, you know, like, it's just...
I was this close.
it's like when Adam Sandler is some amazing athlete. And it's like, really?
Yeah.
Really? He's an ex-quarterback? Really? Adam Sandler. Okay. Sure. Yeah, it's tough. You're right. With Emilio Estevez, he needs to work on that tough guy act a bit more, but it's like his brother got all the tough guy genes. Charlie Sheen can pull off tough guy, but Emilio Estevez can't.
Yeah, you can see it. You can see it in this movie. Whenever he has to play the fun, playful, like, scamp, he excels. He even actually does like pretty good with the like grieving like sorrow in that.
Yeah.
But when he has to be intimidating, it just falls apart.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very tough. It is very tough. I guess it's also that baby face of Emilio Estevez too, right? I mean, he doesn't look much older than this kid that has come looking for a job, so yeah, like even nowadays, Emilio Estevez old still doesn't look old.
No.
Yeah, he's got fortunate like fountain of youth genes. But yeah, no, the kid wants to ride with the Prince of the Pistoliers.
That's an interesting name.
Yeah, and then ultimately, Billy gets found. This is what this movie is a lot of. I've discovered Billy is hiding. Billy gets found. Billy runs away. Billy hides. Billy gets found. Billy runs away.
Yeah, that's the life of an outlaw.
Yeah. Like, it is a very repetitive movie in that sense.
One, like, inconsistency that I think, if I remember remembering this right, I kind of remembered it when we were doing the first Young Guns one, but I didn't watch Young Guns 2, so I didn't know how the whole Pat Garrett situation. I remember how everything pans out with Pat Garrett.
Yeah.
But I did not realize that Pat and Billy start this movie as pals, as friends.
Yeah.
Because Young Guns, you can tell that there was no intention of a sequel. They introduce Pat Garrett in that movie at some point in like just a one-off scene where Pat and Billy meet and like shake hands, and it like, you know, the story. So you're like, oh, you like in your mind, your audience mind, you can be like, oh, like that's interesting because like that's the guy we know who ends up killing him.
Yeah.
But the circumstances in which they meet in that movie, Pat is like a decent human in that movie. Like he's just like a normal, like I feel like law abiding townsman.
Yeah.
And then in this movie it starts and he's part of this like outlaw gang. And I feel like it's one of those things where they just were like, man, we want to tell this story. So like, let's just forget about that piece.
Well, it's
in the back.
That's 100% Hollywood though, is what this one is. Because the real story, Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid were not friends.
Yeah.
They were acquaintances. They were friendly. They hung out at the same saloon. They were aware of each other in a friendly way, but he never rode with Billy the Kid. Like that was all completely fabricated. So the meeting of Pat Garrett in the first one was more accurate. You know, like it's So they just wanted drama for drama's sake. There are a lot of things in this movie where it's like, okay, yeah, no, that's Hollywood magic right there. That is all that.
And like this is one of those moments for me where I was like, I had never clued in that Pat at the beginning of the movie is Pat Garrett.
Oh, okay.
Because like
he gets the haircut.
He gets the haircut. He looks so different. Like when I never like followed the plot as a child see like what had happened. I was just like, oh, they hired this new sheriff, this Pat Garrett guy, to hunt him down.
Yeah.
And I thought at the end thing was more of like a mutual respect of just the like, I've been chasing you for so long. Like even though I don't like you, I do kind of respect you, and I killed your buddies and stuff. And like that, I did not clue in at all when I was younger to the fact that this guy had been riding with Billy
Clark Kent took at the off start his glasses. Of the movie.
Yeah.
You're like, where'd Clark go?
Yeah. I was like, ah, get back to the shooting and the running away and the
yeah. You thought his buddy retired to go and start a new life? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. No, I could see that. That's true. Well, he does definitely clean up nicely. Like that's true. Is when he did first, even on this viewing for me, it took me an extra second to go, oh shit, that's Pat Garrett again. Like it did take me a second. I was missing a few connective moments in this movie though, like. The first time when Billy gets caught and he gets, you know, he ends up chasing out of town, he ends up in the meeting with the governor. When was that meeting set up? Like, just all of a sudden, he's in a meeting with the governor talking about how he will testify against the guys that shot, you know, whatever, John Locke from the first movie.
I think there's a mention about, like, how the governor is, like, when he first comes in and that like that other dude, I could just picture the scene where this guy is like walking into the building before the
kid gets introduced, before
the police come in, and he mentions to Billy like that the governor is like offering basically like amnesty or whatever
I had a few connective tissue issues in the movie with that one where I don't know if I was missing lines or something, so if there was a line about it, then I just missed it, because all of a sudden it's like, okay, why is Billy in this meeting? I don't understand why this meeting's even taking place.
Yeah,
it's weird. Yeah, and then like all of a sudden he's doing the shooting tricks for the guy. Right. Oh, you've only got one bullet or two bullets left. How are you going to do it? Three candles, two bullets. That's one of those scenes that I always remember as well.
Yeah.
It just stuck with me all these years.
Yeah. Good old Billy. What are those things called? The candelabra?
Yeah. But yeah, it turns out that the governor really had no power to like pardon him, give him a full pardon. So he just kind of got tricked into getting caught. And this is where we found out that big wrists and small hands were beneficial to him many times in escaping.
Yeah.
Got him out of a number of pickles.
It's also like, this is where we get to like learn about like a little bit about the Old West with like the lynch mobs and stuff that I thought was interesting.
Yeah.
It's like, it's like people are trying to do things lawfully, but you just know that at any point, like a bunch of guys in hoods with pitchforks and torches could show up and just try to take matters into their own hands, and the law isn't going to do anything about it.
Yeah, no, I agree. That was something that I never really, I mean, there's only one thing you really think of a lynch mob for, and it's not this, right? Like, it's
more racist.
Yeah, it's a lot more racist. I mean, we still have white hoods on the faces, but yeah, it is one thing that I never really realized that there was, that's how this lawless entity worked, was kind of going around and doing the things that everyone else refused to do. Yeah, what a job. You know,
I don't think you could pay me any amount of money to go back in time and be a sheriff in like these times.
No, not a lot of job security. And yeah, it's I don't even like confronting people that don't have enough change on my bus. I mean, it's
that's where he escaped.
Yeah, this is where though they pose as a lynch mob.
But we also got like the epic line about like the $1.80 or whatever, with because there's like the shotgun full of change.
Best $1.80 I ever spent. Yeah. 18 dimes right through the chest. Yeah, no, and I guess that "Hey Bob," where he gets him to look up, I guess that is something that they say actually happened, was him yelling out "Hey Bob" and getting the guy's attention and shooting him in the chest. There's conflicting reports of to what he actually screamed out, but it is agreed upon that he yelled something out to Bob to get him to turn around.
Yes.
Plugged him full of dimes.
I'll say like that. I don't know. Whenever I think of Young Guns, I just think of that, like, that laugh that, like, Emilio Estevez has. Like, just that, like, giddy, like, I just killed somebody and it's the most hilarious thing I did all day. Like, type laugh. Like,
just living his life out there. Man, what a life it is to be Billy the Kid.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, he escapes and he helps his buddies escape by pretending to be a lynch mob. So, I mean, bringing it back to the lynch mob until the real lynch mob shows up. And that's, I guess, where we see John Bon Jovi get shot. That is a fascinating imprisonation. Sure. A way of imprisoning people is the pit.
Throw them in a hole.
Yeah. With the bars over top of it. Yeah.
I think that would be by far one of my least favorite ways to be imprisoned if I had to choose. Like just thrown in a pit with a bunch of people.
Yeah. I feel like it would be effective, though. It must have worked. They have wood bars. They don't even have strong bars to keep them in.
I was thinking afterwards, though, I was like, it might have been better to dig the pit a little bit deeper. Because it seems like it's about the height of, like, a man standing with his arms raised.
Yeah.
Because, like, it's tall enough that, like, when the lynch mob shows up and the bars get pulled off, like, it's not like anybody really needs help to get out. Like, no, people can just, like, kind of climb out. Yeah.
Yeah. Get on my back. Piggyback rides and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, I guess you're at the disadvantage. You don't have the high ground. You know, Obi-Wan Kenobi knows all about that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so it's all pandemonium, though, because all the prisoners are escaping except John Bon Jovi, who gets shot in the chest. And Billy the Kid throws bullets in the fire. That's an effective way of getting people to disperse. Throw a box of ammunition in the flaming building.
And then we get more of the epic, like, fight. We're going to gunfight our way out and run to the hills score.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That features so heavily in this movie.
And then, because they have escaped, now it's time for them to hide a bit, and this is where we get the scene with trying to get Billy to shoot off the cuffs. That was definitely a fun moment.
Yeah.
I don't know, Doc, my hand's shaky. Then ends up doing the backward somersault to shoot off the handcuffs. But yeah. But after you shoot them off, now what? Yeah, still got the fucking bracelets on, like... Why weren't you trying to pick them the whole time?
You're going to live that way the rest of your days. Yeah.
I'm guess shackled. This is just me now.
I'm a genie. I am the genie of the lamp.
Yeah, Doc doesn't want to stay, though. But he reluctantly comes along when he realizes that there's people chasing after them. Dave, of course, doesn't like having anyone in the gang. They're going to steal more of Dave's thunder. He definitely doesn't like having that Mexican Indian around. That's a terrible thing. And then, see, now we get the other part that was another one where I was missing the connective tissue. After they all escape, they end up back in Lincoln, and back in Lincoln, the casket business is just booming. That's that's where the people that are chasing them are at. Anyway, we end up meeting Henry French, right? Cameron Frye of 1870, and... when did we find out that they were holding auditions for new members of the gang? Like, the Henry French addition came out of nowhere to me. I didn't realize that they were trying to add to the gang. They just got Chavez and Doc. Why do they need more people?
Yeah. Again, I'm like, I don't know. It's hard for me to know, like, what I'm actually remembering and what my brain is just making up. But again, I feel like I thought I remembered some mention about how they were gonna need more people, but
Oh, okay.
I could just be misremembering that.
Yeah, that works. Another scene that makes no sense to me is, you know, okay, so Pat Garrett bails on the group. He's decided that he just wants to set up a shop in Lincoln. And so then Billy goes to see Mr. Chisholm to try to get $500 out of him. So was there any mention of Mr. Chisholm before they end up going to see Mr. Chisholm?
I think he's in the first movie. I think he was like the neighbor of like John Tunstall or something. Like, I think,
yeah,
I think they go to see him in the first movie at some point.
I'm just wondering though, if like, did I like it, was there a line though in this movie that said, let's go see him to get some money?
Oh no, there's not. They just show up.
Okay. That's what I was throwing me off, is it's like, okay, now we're here. So there were a few moments in the movie where it's like, oh, okay, now we're doing this. Oh, okay, now we're doing this. But I wasn't getting the connective tissue.
Yeah, that one, I remember thinking like, oh, this is the way this one is shot, like the way it starts with like basically like a kind of like a tight camera on John Chisholm. It's shot in a way that's like, hey, remember this guy from the last movie?
Yeah.
And then it like pulls out and then they're riding up.
Well, and of course, the guy that James Coburn, the guy that plays John Chisholm, I mean, he's a Western star back from the day. He says some sort of line about, you know, his ass or something like that. Anyway, it's actually a paraphrased line from a movie that he was in where he played Pat Garrett.
Yeah.
So it's that like James Coburn has been around for years. So that shot could have also, you know, on one hand, it's remember this guy from the first movie. And it's like, we got James Coburn.
Yeah.
He came in and did one more day of shooting for us. Because really that and him around the table, when else do we see him? There's two scenes with this man in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is a great scene, though.
I really like that scene. And I guess like it does kind of just serve the function of like bringing Chisholm to the table to like put the money up to get Garrett.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah. But I'll take $5 off for every one of the guys you kill, and the whole gun, you know, before I reach my gun, you'll be dead. So, but ultimately, yeah, that, so you're right. That's the crux of how we get Pat Garrett to turn coat on Billy the Kid, so that he's now going to be the law. The reveal of him in the all black getup is pretty great, though.
Yeah,
here comes Pat Garrett.
I'm surprised they didn't just play some Johnny Cash.
Yeah,
as he steps out.
Yeah, totally.
And like, I don't know. He changes completely.
Yeah.
He changes in like attitude, appearance, like it's no wonder to me why I was like, I didn't even recognize the guy.
Yeah, he's taking the character very seriously. Yeah. Yeah, he should have had a bit of that gruffness from the old time. Yeah, just cuz you're the law now, why are you walking differently?
Yeah. Yeah.
I had a note too. I forgot about this when they are talking about hiring Pat Garrett to get Billy the Kid. They're all sitting around drinking tea. And it's hilarious to me to see like these guys that are dressed like tough cowboys that have these delicate flowery teacups and they've got their pinkies raised and everything like that.
They should be on some sort of like Georgia estate.
Yeah, exactly.
Plantation. Well, now I say, sir, we need to get someone to take rid of this Billy the Kid fella.
Oh, I've got the vapors, you talking about that. Okay, so, yeah, so little, Pat Garrett.
Little free, I used to want, like, this One Piece theater for you.
That's right, that's right. For $1,000, that's all it takes, you know? He just $1,000 and...
Did you put that into like
back on his best friend?
Did you put that into like an inflation calculator from 1870?
No, I did not. That actually. Now I'm curious. 1870.
$1 million.
$1,000 today is the equivalent of $23,842.14.
I mean, not bad.
Yeah, yeah.
The funniest add-on to me of Pat getting hired to do this job is the fact that his immediate move is to go hire a journalist.
Yeah.
To follow and document his hunt.
It's a choice. Yeah. And I mean, of course he finds like one that has no trail riding experience whatsoever, of course. But yeah, it is a weird, like, he knows this is going to be something that you have to, the ego on this man. I mean, I guess he's like an early social influencer. You know, yeah. That's what he's a Kardashian before the Kardashians. He's like, oh, no, we need all of this on tape. So we, with the boys, though, the squad, meanwhile, the gang, Billy, the kids' gang, we get to the point where they're trying to decide whether to go through the indigenous burial ground or not. And of course, Dave just wants to go right through it. And because they have Chavez with them, they're not going to do that. I don't think the other guys would have anyway. There's definitely something spooky about how this burial ground is set up that I don't think I'd want to walk through there knowing nothing about what was actually going on there. I'd be like, oh, let's steer clear of this one. But I guess that fight scene, the part where the knife goes through the arm, where he and Dave get into it and they end up stabbing him through the arm, they ended up adding that into the scene because Lou Diamond Phillips had his arm broken earlier in the shoot. And so they had this scene where they could justify having an injured arm for the rest of the movie. But he broke his arm because in one of the scenes he was dragged by a spooked horse.
Oh.
Yeah, and he broke his arm and a kneecap. So the horse was spooked when Emilio Estevez fired a gun, which threw him off, and then he was dragged by the noose around his neck. Yeah, which was tied to the saddle horn. So the scene was never refilmed. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that was so because he had this broken arm, they put in this bit where he ended up getting his arm all fucked up by Dave.
Do you want your knife back? That's probably one of the most epic lines of the whole movie.
Oh, yeah,
I do think it's weird that, like,
it's a good bone handled knife.
They get in the fight because, like, Dave wants to, like, dig up Indian bones to sell.
Yeah.
And I was like, is that real? Like, is that a real thing?
Yeah, that was an occupation at one point, apparently. The one that fascinated me was the guys that, the guano farmers. Like, what are the benefits of farming guano?
What is guano?
Batshit!
Oh, batshit. I knew it sounded familiar. Like, doesn't it get you high or something?
Maybe. I don't know. But it's the Old West is a fascinating time just because it's like you have these pop-up industrial enterprises that happen where it's like, okay, well, now we're farming batshit, you know?
Yeah.
Like, just the idea of the gold rush is fascinating to me. Everyone wants to come out for this one metal. Like, we were the ones that decided that this one metal is worth something. Fascinating. So they end up getting to White Oaks, where they don't tolerate scum. It says so right on their sign. You know, like politicians and lawyers. Scum. Billy the Kid always. See, this is one of those moments where I feel like they just ramped up the comedy of Billy the Kid. You know, like,
yeah,
let's throw in some of these one-liners. We like the parts where we laugh the most from the first movie, so let's give them a few more. But we're going to go and get a little attention from the ladies for these boys. I love when the kid gets laid and he walks out of there with all the swagger of DJ Qualls from Road Trip. You know, it's like he's looking at himself in the mirror. He just got some, that 15-year-old. Or DJ 14. Qualls, and D- like
DJ Qualls is another guy who could have played that role.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. But of course, you know, because they have found safe haven for a few minutes, what happens is the lynch mob shows up to get Billy.
Time to run, boys.
Time to run. And we get the point, the whole negotiation for Chavez, you know, I got to go out with something. Give me the Indian at least. And like just the whole negotiation for Chavez. But then they end up killing him off by dressing him up as Chavez and pushing him out the door. Yeah, the old switcheroo.
And I love when the townspeople realize it's this. They're just like, oh, that's the sheriff.
Just shot the marshal. Yeah,
that's the marshal.
Or their deputy or whatever he was. Yeah.
And they're just like, oh well.
But then we, you know, like you said, the turn that we get on Pat, because all of a sudden Pat now comes in and he's investigating, and then he has the whole exchange with Miss Jenny. Where he's just, you know, she's just like, I don't lay with the law. And he's like, well, good, because I don't lay with no whores neither. Yeah. Right? You know, and it's like, whoa, come on, Pat.
Like he's just a changed man. Like,
last week, yeah. You were probably with Miss Jenny. Right?
Yeah, Pat's like that annoying guy who, like, you know, like one, like 2 weeks ago, he was hanging out at the bar eating nachos. And now he's like He's like eating green smoothies and working out at the gym every day.
Yeah.
I want to tell you about it.
It's that annoying friend that really just got into something really hard recently. Yeah. So yeah, gym rat, some sort of diet. Yeah. He's
a carnivore diet guy.
Yeah. Yeah. But you know, the one good thing about Pat burning down the whorehouse though, is we do get the sexual case, awakening of Colin Stewart. The tasteful nude. Well, she sits side saddle. So that right there tells you that she's a lady.
Yes. I suppose it does. To be honest, when I watched that scene, again, maybe it's similar to, I don't know why, but watching these Westerns, it was the same thing with watching John Candy on the horse. But this time I was like, I bet that was uncomfortable. Yeah. I bet it was uncomfortable to be bare-assed on that saddle riding a horse with a bunch of people around.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. And, like, it's very obvious that she has to sit in a very specific way so that you can't see anything here. And, you know, like, butt was all they were allowed. Yeah. Very clearly, butt was all they were allowed. The gang ends up at the guano farm, which I mentioned, and then Pat ends up catching up with them. So now they've run away again, and now Pat is caught up with them instead of the lynch mob. Here's like a question, like a filmmaking question for you. When they get to the edge of the really steep hill, right, where they all stop their horses and Chavez ends up going for it, how do you think they did that?
I had that same question because I was like, those horses look like they took a tumble.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, how could you get away with that even in 1990?
I feel like my theory is that it was like a much flatter surface than it looks, but the camera was askew. Yeah. And these horses are trained to lay down, but make it look violent when they lay down. So I feel like maybe that's what was happening. But boy, oh boy, like, did that look like a bunch of terrifying stunts? Like, you're making those horses do some things horses should not be doing.
Yeah. Like, it looked, like, it is one of my favorite scenes. Like, it looks really cool, but I was just, like, looking at it today, I was just like, man, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know, like, I should have checked to see if there was, like, a disclaimer saying that no animals were injured in the making of this film.
Well, there was. Yeah, no, this does have a no animal or whatever, or at least the Humane Society monitored animal activity, but there was nothing left out in that sense. So I don't know. I do like the moment though of wow, what were you yelling at him to make him go? I was telling him to stop.
Is that like Chavez? Stop. Like, he's just like so. Chavez, like Lou Diamond Phillips, more so in this movie, I think, probably because he's been like stabbed through the arm and now we know he had an actual broken arm. But like, his face through this entire movie is like, I've had fucking enough of this shit.
Oh, like, he's seen some shit at this point. Yeah. But I will say that I found him to be one of the most interesting characters to watch.
Yeah.
Like, he really, like, Doc is really pushed aside in this one.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, like, Dave, well, yeah, it's Christian Slater doing his thing, but he's the underused character. And yeah, I love Henry, but it's like Chavez is the one that's out there that's really doing some stuff once again. I mean, he had the big emotional moment in the first one, too, where he's telling the story of his slaughtered family. Yeah, no, good old Chavez. Big props for Lou Diamond Phillips, you know.
I was going to say, like, both, I wrote in my notes that both, like, as fun as this movie is, and, like, as, like, you know, chaotic and just, like, popcorn adventure movie, like, both Doc and Chavez dying, like, really hit me. Yeah. Like, I thought both of their deaths were, like, very poignant. And
well, now, do you want the truth about Doc and Chavez?
Sure.
Yeah, okay. Well, the real Doc and Chavez lived until 1929. Doc lived till 29, and Chavez lived till 1923. Chavez did not die of a gut wound. They both died of natural causes, old age. Wow. Yeah, so yeah, their deaths were definitely Hollywood magic. The Doc's death in the movie, where he gets filled with holes, that's actually Charlie Beaudry's death. And Charlie Beaudry, played by Casey Shemesko in the first movie, that's actually how that character is supposed to die, is in a hail of gunfire.
Well, he does die at the end of the first movie in a hail of gunfire.
Yeah.
But
yeah, so it's just it's the same death. Yeah, they just took the same death to use for Doc. Doc died of old age.
Yeah, cuz Charlie, if I remember right, is it him they send out in the case, or is that Billy?
Billy goes out in the case.
Okay. Yeah, Charlie does have, like, no, Charlie has the death where he's like he's been trying to kill that other, like, bounty hunter, or he's been afraid of that bounty hunter the whole time, and he ends up killing him as he, like, dies.
I don't remember already. Oh my god,
I just remember his bloody smile as he kills him, and then he gets,
I mean, to be fair, it was 100 episodes ago. That was like 2 years ago that we watched that movie, so.
these movies are just burned in my brain.
Yeah, well, good. So it ends up, though, that all of Billy's, like, questing in this movie for the trail to Mexico has just been a big ruse, because, you know, the real adventure is the friends you make along the way. So, this trail to Mexico doesn't exist. He just wanted to ride with his old
Billy's
gang.
Literally just like, he's like, you know, like the last roommate to move out after everybody else is like, mm-hmm. gotten married and gotten jobs, and he still just wants to play PlayStation and like eat pizza and drink beer.
Yeah, yeah. Come on, John.
So I just want to live for the moment.
Yeah. But yeah, so they have been without anyone. They've been safe for a little while again. So of course, this is an opportunity for Pat to catch up with them once again, and that's when they get surrounded in the little shack. Doc gets killed. Chavez gets the bullet in the gut, both of which never actually happened. And
Tom gets killed.
Oh, yes. Pat, right. Kills Tom. Yeah. Sorry, that was a single line that I had separated from all my other notes because I did want to make sure. Yeah, that was a good moment. Yeah,
you killed the bullworm.
Yeah. But that one's on him. But no, the into the sun shot, that was a... It was a good looking shot too, I thought.
Yeah,
I don't know. Yeah. But yeah, so they're surrounded. People get shot. Henry goes in for the save. Henry finally does something. And Dave runs away like a coward.
Yeah, it pisses me off that, like, Chavez gets killed, like, gets shot basically, like, trying to save Dave. And then, mm-hmm. and then that little bitch just runs off.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I do like that Henry goes in for the save. Like, Henry, unlike Dave, has actually been like, no, he's part of the gang, right? Like,
yeah, he's in it.
Yeah, he's in it. So, but Billy ends up getting captured. Now, Is this an old-timey thing that they actually did? Was, like, when the judge has his proclamation of you shall be hung by the neck until you're dead. Like, was the repetition thing actually something that they did back then, or...
I don't know.
You can kiss my ass. Yeah. It's just weird. Like, you know, I've gone to enough, like, old cities in my travels, you know, things like London or Paris, where you see the ways that the old buildings where it's the U's or V's back then, things like that, where it's like all these ways that you look through old-timey literature and you see how they used to use all these unnecessary words, and it makes me wonder, like, would they have said dead three times? Was that, I don't know, it just...
If I was only dead.
Yeah.
I mean, it honestly wouldn't surprise me, I mean...
So much pomp and circumstance.
In a world where judges would wear those ridiculous wigs with the, like,
that's true,
curls and tassels and stuff.
Yeah.
I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility.
No, I suppose not. But once again, Billy escapes because, well, this one's thanks to Jane. Jenny, what is her name? I've gone back and forth. Is it Jane? I was calling her Jenny before. Yeah. But yeah, thanks to the gun that she planted in the outhouse.
I love that scene. That scene actually reminded me of my daughter because a couple of weeks ago, I was like at working from home and I had to leave and I could not find my keys anywhere. Mm. And I had to text my wife and be like, did you take my keys with you? And she's like, oh no, like she wanted to trick you. So she hid your keys under her like massive stuffed teddy bear. And so then I found them. But then when I got home, I put them back to let the ruse play out.
Oh, okay.
And when I got home, I was like, Daddy can't find his keys. Do you know where they are? And that laugh that Billy has, that's what she's like. She just like could not contain herself. Like she just ran over. She was just like.
Nice. Nice.
Just like, and I was like, what are you laughing? Like, but it was that exact laugh that.
But when he's hiding around the edge of the outhouse, yeah. I did forget to mention one thing when the young kid gets killed, because that's when everyone gets sad and, you know, Chavez is all mopey and everything like that. And Billy, he's looking through the kid's bag and sees how innocent this kid has because he has a jar of marbles.
Yeah.
But what kind of jar? I'll tell you in Sponsorship Corner. Because I think that's the only real sponsor. But you'll know who this is because you're a Colorado Avalanche fan. Always on the lookout for product placements in movies, this week Young Guns 2 is brought to you by Ball. The jars.
Oh, Ballerina.
Ballerina. Yeah. And Harper's Weekly, which I know is a real magazine, the Weekly New Mexican, Chicago News, New York Daily Tribune, and the New York Bazaar. And this has been Sponsorship Corner. But yeah, when I saw that ball jar, I'm like, yes, finally something. And then he hucks it against the rock. Yeah, Ballerina. I remember the first time that I saw a game at Ball Arena, and I'm like, that's not, like, ball as in the fucking mason jars, right? Like, that's, like, it looks the same, but is it? Yep. But they do way more than just that.
It's crazy to think that ball, like, that's, like, such old money.
Yeah.
Like, that's nuts.
Yeah. 150 years after this movie, they're making... They're sponsoring an arena. That's, yeah. So after Billy escapes, thanks to Jane, who hid the gun in the outhouse, he meets up with Chavez and Henry again. And we find out Chavez is not going to survive his injury. And Henry gets christened Buckshot George, but he doesn't want that name. Even though he wanted a nickname right off the bat, no, it's William Henry French. And that's a good name, too.
I thought that was like such a good scene.
It is,
like,
yeah.
I thought Emilio, like what I was talking about before, where he does good with like the drama. I thought he crushed that, the line delivery.
Oh, and also with like Alan Ruck. I mean, I kid about the fact that anytime we see him in a movie, it's like, oh, here's Cameron Frye. You know, Speed was, oh, it's Cameron Frye in L.A. You know, oh, here's Cameron Frye in 1870. But he's a really good actor as well, and I really like what he did with Henry French. I mean, it's I thought he was a really fun character to add into this little group. Just kind of conscience for the group. Like you kind of need a level head, and that's what he seemed to be.
Yeah. He kind of weirdly took the doc role
A little bit, yeah. Like
from the first
was
movie.
Kiefer Sutherland too busy with something else that he's like, okay, I can only commit to half the schedule, so we'll throw in Alan Ruck instead. So after Chavez dies, we've got a bit of a fiesta going on in the town, and this is when Pat finally catches up with him and does a bang up job of being a villain with his lighting of the candle and all that sort of stuff. Like he definitely knows how to set the mood. So good job, Pat Garrett. You didn't miss that day of sheriffing school.
Yeah, like
Intimidation
I was gonna
day.
say when Pat becomes like he kills it as the sheriff in
Yeah.
terms of being like, you know, a threatening presence and just like, you know, this movie is shot very well when it
Yeah.
comes to like using the camera to really establish people's vibe and motivation.
Yeah, you almost didn't need the turn on his best friend, quote unquote. Like you did not need that aspect of it for him to be an interesting figure. Yeah.
Like you could, it would have been, I actually think it would have been better if he wasn't like the friend. I think it would have been better if he was just similar to how he is in the first movie. Like just kind of like a guy who's aware and familiar
Yeah.
and is just like, you know, sees an opportunity to be the guy to get the job done.
Yeah. Well, it's nice when you have those hero villain, you know, kind of conflict, like, but they still have a relationship. I mean, Catch Me If You Can is an example of something like that, where over the years he's developed this relationship with the guy just because he's been chasing him for so long. And to be able to bring something like that into this, you know, Batman needs to have the Riddler monologue at him or something like that. You know, you need to have this relationship between them. It doesn't have to be a friend that turns sour. Yeah, you can still have an interesting relationship between these two men with just that aspect of it. Yeah. But in the end, the gun goes off and everything's left a little ambiguous anyway. So you're supposed to wonder, ooh, is his story from the beginning actually legit? And I guess, like, historically, there is actually some question about, you know, like the guy that was outside never properly saw the body. They never, you know, apparently the lights actually weren't that good. So maybe it was him. Maybe I don't know how there is actually this confusion over identifying the body, but there is actually a question of whether Pat Garrett actually killed Billy the Kid.
Yeah, I wonder. I mean, I don't know how, like, if he's not, if it wasn't like the body wasn't like maimed in some kind of way. I don't know, like,
Yeah,
how
would have had to
you.
be like eight in the face, maybe would have done.
Yeah,
It.
like, I don't know. Or
In 1870, I guess you're not going to dental records to identify that body.
was it just like, and I mean, I guess it brings up a bar question that could never, but whose body? If not him, then who? Who was
Well,
it? Like, just some guy?
and you're also dealing with a time in history where, like,
There's no forensics. There's
there's
no
well,
like,
no forensic. Yeah, there's no actual policing, but even the pictures that they have of Billy the Kid are drawings, right? Like, there are very few actual photographs of this man that does everyone know what he actually looks like for real?
and they're all going to be based on like
Eyewitness
description,
accounts? Yeah,
they're not
exactly.
going to be, yeah.
Yeah, so it really could be, yeah, guy kind of looks similar. I mean, the kid that Pat Garrett shot up at the top of the hill, you could have said that was Billy the Kid. Young guy, no facial hair. Okay, there you go, Billy the Kid. Yeah, if you've never actually seen him in person.
Yeah, I guess like they wanted to leave it ambiguous and a mystery, but I was kind of, this is one of those movies where I feel like it would have, they would have had that happen. I kind of like wish there would have been a resolution of like Pat seeing Billy like right away, And then like have the flashback explanation that would show like maybe they did use the kid because he just got killed like the day before
True.
ish like you know and Pat he would like Pat thought that was him when he shot like
Maybe.
the kid didn't seem to have like any ties. But I mean, that's more just like my brain wanting like the closure.
Well, because I mean, because part of me for when they're burying him is kind of like, no one's looking in the box. None of those posse guys are looking in the box to know that that's him. And then we get the little teaser of Billy steals Pat's horse. And then the credits roll. We've got a couple of stories where we find out that Dave was beheaded in Mexico, which was true. As a warning to outlaws, not so much. His crimes just caught up with him. But it actually took him several years to get to Mexico. He didn't get to Mexico quite as quickly as they made it seem in the movie. And then Pat Garrett's book was a failure and died in and he died in 1908, shot by a 20-year-old man. That was also true. But then, I guess the old man's discredited stories. There has been more recent DNA stuff since this movie has come out where they're still looking at maybe this guy could have been telling the truth. So
Huh.
there's still this mystery about it.
That's wild.
And then, in the end, we're shot down in a blaze of glory. And there we go. I did read that originally Emilio Estevez approached Jon Bon Jovi to ask for permission for his song Wanted Dead or Alive. But Bon Jovi was like, you know what? The lyrics aren't appropriate, but I'll write you a new song. So that's
Oh.
how we ended up with Blaze of Glory. I performed it for him on acoustic guitar, and Emilio's like, yep, sounds good. And then he went on to do a whole album that was basically inspired by the sound of this. His next album was kind of a blaze of glory. So,
Yeah, it
anyway.
was like an homage to Young Guns.
But I fucking love this song. I mean, it's a banger.
Yeah, that's like one of the as far as movie songs
Soundtrack
go,
songs,
I think Blaze of Glory has to be top three, if not number one. Like it's one of the best.
it's a good one. And there we go. That is Young Guns 2. Oh boy, now Colin on IMDb, it scored 6.5 out of 10, has a Metascore of 47. On Rotten Tomatoes, critics not liking it, 31% on the tomato meter, but an audience rating of 66%. But Colin, those are just numbers, like a knife through the arm. Hit us with some reviews.
All right. This reviewer says 3.5 out of 5 stars. Not as good as the original, yet not nearly as bad as Rotten Tomatoes makes it out to be. This is a fun ride from start to finish. The chase scenes, action scenes, all of it is just plain fun. Too many reviewers base their reviews on actual history and titles like this and don't know how to just enjoy a cool action flick. Not everything has to be Inception-style story writing, folks. Stop taking life so seriously. Besides, you'll never make it out alive anyways. Epic Western. Period.
Nice, okay. Epic. So epic.
This reviewer says 4 out of 5 stars. This film is a childhood favorite of mine, so I might be biased, but as far as fun shoot 'em up westerns go, this one is high on my list. It is not an intellectual film or experimental by any means, but the soundtrack will be stuck in your head for days, and there are enough interesting characters and guns, Colt Lightnings, to keep your attention. Personally, I love this version of Billy despite its non-factual accuracy. It's a fun 90s Western, simple as that.
I like how they say the soundtrack will be stuck in your head. So the one song, what other soundtrack is stuck in your head? Do you have the musical score running through your head?
Jake H says 4.5 out of 5 stars. People who give this a poor score need to either remove the stick up their asses or are too hung up on what they think are historical inaccuracies. But if you're looking for a good time that is remarkably accurate, Wiki Billy the Kid, if you don't believe me, this is the movie for you. You see, too many so-called quote-unquote scholars can't imagine that most of the major events in this movie have actually been documented and only remember what was initially quote-unquote believed about Billy. They just assume this movie is just Hollywood embellishing, when it's not. That's what made Billy the Kid so great. The more you know, the more you realize that what a true legend he was. It's too bad many are ignorant and have their reasons to quote-unquote hate, but from what I've read and studied, he was one of the good guys. The cattle barons and corrupt politicians were the real criminals and dirtbags, in my opinion.
Oh boy, this guy doesn't like me now because I'm one of those scholars. And I'm not saying it as anything against the movie. I am saying that yes, Hollywood embellished it, but he's right. The events were actually fairly accurate. It's just the players in the events aren't necessarily accurate, and that's all that there is to actually this guy about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's all I got.
Right on. Yeah. So. I mean, mid-60s from audiences, and I guess those are the only numbers we really care about. Yeah, with this one, I feel like Young Guns 1 is the better movie, but mm-hmm. Young Guns 2 is the funner movie.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah, like, this one I found a little chaotic. This movie's a little bit ADHD. It kind of, oh, yeah. It jumps around quite a bit. And it, like I said, very repetitive. You know, he gets away, he gets caught, he gets away, he gets caught. And so, you know, how many scenes of Billy moping around saying, oh, there's a price on my head, do we have to watch? Right? It is very repetitive, but it is a fun, I still had a lot of fun with it. But yeah, as far as narratives go, the first one is probably the better movie. But yeah, I definitely had fun with Young Guns too.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I think, yeah, you're right. The first one, if you want to watch a good story, the first one is by far better. Like, the first one has, yeah, like, has like a clear antagonist. There's like a clear goal for what the regulators are trying to do, and you know, the obstacles that they have to overcome.
Yeah, this one is, he kind of wants to bring someone to justice, but yeah, these guys aren't helping him. And like, yeah.
This one is really what you just said. Billy is running away the whole time.
Yeah.
This story in this one is actually Pat Garrett.
Yeah.
Weirdly. Like, the story is like him going from being part of Billy's gang to the sheriff and the hunt. Like, if they wanted to make the movie Young Guns 2 like a story, they should have focused more time on Pat Garrett.
Mm-hmm.
But the Billy story is literally just him running away, getting captured, escaping, running away. Like you said, getting captured. Like, that's all over he does the whole movie. Yeah, there's no
the whole movie.
You think it's about trying to get to that Mexican Blackbird trail, but then we discovered that was just, he just wanted to keep the fam together.
The whole time, yeah. So, it's all about family.
So, like, once that's out of the way, like, you know, they don't even really have a goal at that point. Like,
yeah. Yeah, so, yeah, the story, not great on this one, but
it is
for
fun.
A fun time. Yeah. It's, yeah, a lot of fun.
Yeah. I agree.
Well, there we go. I think that's Young Guns 2, and that's our show for this week. Oh boy, if you like that show, well, help out your boys. Go tell someone about our show, because word of mouth is really important. It means more coming from someone if you say, hey, there's this show I like, and I think you'd like it too. Or if you want to go above and beyond and tell the world, go over to whatever app you listen to your podcast on and give us some stars. Give us as many stars as you can. Help use those algorithms to drive us up some charts. Help us get noticed. Or if you want to be our hero and donate to the show, go over to patreon.com/IUsedToLikeThisOne and you become an executive producer. So you get a shout out just like executive producer Joshua Blum of the 13th Hour Podcast. Boom.
As soon as you said hero, I just had Enrique Iglesias blast into my brain.
I can be your hero, baby.
You can give us some reviews. Oh, yeah. Anyways, if you want to head over to our website, IUsedToLikeThisOne.com, where you can find links to all of our social media pages and podcast episodes, and drop us a line at IUsedToLikeThisOne@gmail.com and let us know what movies you used to like, and then maybe we'll talk about them on this very program, as Frank likes to say. Reprogram.
Program. Yeah. as a program. And of course, music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band, Carter in the Capitals, anywhere you listen to music. Oh boy, Colin, Western month. Next week, I mean, we talked about the fact that we had a couple of old ones, and now we're going on to the contemporary ones. Next week is all you, baby. I'm throwing, I know this is one of your favorites, which always takes me by surprise, and I have a confession, I don't think I've ever actually seen it.
Well, you're about to have your world rock. I just debated whether or not Kiefer Sutherland was a bona fide movie star, and this movie proves he is, because we're watching The Cowboy Way.
Back-to-back Kiefer. I'm excited. Yeah, because I think I've seen it, but I don't know. Like, this is one where it's probably going to be a bunch of flashbacks for me if I have seen it.
I love this movie so much that normally when it comes to, like, watching movies for the show, I check to see if it's on streaming. This movie wasn't on streaming. So then I checked to see if it's available for rent on Amazon or Google Play. Shockingly, it was not. So I went over to Amazon and I bought it on DVD for $8.99.
Right on.
And I'm going to watch it this week.
You know, it's funny. I just got my Young Guns 2 DVD back from you. You borrowed it like immediately after we did the first movie. Did you watch it until like
this
recording?
I did not. Okay. I watched it for this recording. It has sat on my shelf, and I've been
for 2 years.
Like,
okay,
for 2 years, and I've thought, oh, I should really watch that movie.
Well, and it's funny because you handed it back with Little Giants, and I'm like, oh, that's where that was. Yeah. Shit, because when I unpacked at my new house, I had like these gaps in my where I'm like, I could have sworn there was supposed to be a movie here. Yeah,
it was. Yeah.
Oh boy. Well, right on. So next week, The Cowboy Way. Yeah, I'm like. Should I go into a blind? Like what?
Oh yeah, just go into it. Don't look at. I would say don't look up anything about it.
Okay.
We're dealing with like more rodeo style cowboys in this one, not
okay.
Gun,
that's
not
what
gun,
I thought. Okay,
not
this
gun,
is
not gunslinger style cowboys. So it's a lot of rodeo tropes.
And it's Woody Harrelson as well, right?
Yeah. So we got Woody and Kiefer.
Right on. I'm excited. Right on. Well, there we go. Until next week, I'm Sean Wells.
I'm Colin Stewart.
And we'll see you for The Cowboy Way. And I used to like this one.
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker!
oh, boy. Yeah, I mean, gotta get back to your roots. Your cowboying roots.
Yeah.